Okay, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, November 3rd, 2020. This net meets on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. And this is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness. Talk a little bit about radio emergency preparedness here with regard to what happens when your radio doesn't, a net doesn't work. We experienced that. I'm also going to talk about latest updates on COVID-19 and, of course, any topics that you guys would like to discuss or we're free to move on. Anyway, all amateurs are welcome to participate in COVID-19 discussions during the net and other topics as well. Let's see, we'll start with a short check-in on stations that like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussions. I'm going to start with getting EchoLink users. Please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically and also your name and location. Let me know if you have a question. We'll do our best to answer it, and we'll tell you if I don't know something. Okay, let's try EchoLink users for the emergency preparedness net. Come now. Okay, well, I don't hear any EchoLink users. So let's do general check-ins. Let's see. I will save a little bit of time because I heard Dan, Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo uniform. He has a very distinctive voice. He's checked in. I heard Gerard has Kilo Juliet 7, India Bravo Hotel. Okay, you two are checked in. Who else is out there for the emergency preparedness net?
Kilo Whiskey 8 uniform, Dean, Salem, Oregon.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Okay, a little pause in action there. Let's welcome Richard, Whiskey Zero, Echo Delta Foxtrot, Art, Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, and Dean, Kilo Whiskey 8 Uniform. Gotcha there. Anybody else?
Kilo Juliet 7, November Whiskey Kilo, Nick Canonsville.
Okay, there's Nick, Kilo Juliet 7, November Whiskey Kilo. Welcome, Nick. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net, taking check-ins.
Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray Blaine in Salem.
Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Allen in South Salem.
Kilo Juliet 7 Sierra Alpha Mike, Sam in Salem.
Whiskey 7 Victor Hotel November, Frank in Lebanon.
Good evening. Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor, Walton Woodburn.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem.
Okay, another pause there. That was good because I was starting to panic there. But I got okay, working backwards. There was Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta. Welcome, Richard. Then we had Walt, came before that. Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. Frank was in there, Whiskey 7, Victor Hotel November. Sam was in there, Kilo Juliet 7, Sierra Alpha Mike. Sam, I think it's the first time you checked into my net there. I didn't have you in the log. Welcome. Sam is friends with Alan, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. And there's our friend from South Salem, Blaine. Very helpful to us on the network and getting the repeater going and the mesh network and everything. Got Blaine, Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray. And this is the emergency preparedness set, and we're taking check-ins.
W7 November Alpha Tango, name.
Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot, Tim on Echo Link in Salem.
Okay, very good. We got in there, Tim, on Echolink. That's a good signal there. Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot. Nate, Whiskey 7, November Alpha Tango. Very good. Yeah, we just got out of our CTR Radio Club Zoom meeting. And to say that we have, well, I think we had 9 people tonight. Let's see, I think we had 12 for our Marion County Zoom meeting. So, I don't know. I think we had probably have had more people in face-to-face meetings, and I don't know why that people haven't adopted doing the Zoom thing. It's actually pretty easy to do, and it does have some advantages. Nate gave us a regular PowerPoint presentation tonight on duplexers versus diplexers, and we'll go over that. We can talk about that in the TechNet. Yeah, really good. I mean, you know, you can just see the PowerPoint, and Nate can talk, and it's, it works out pretty well. So it's a good way to do training. So, I encourage people to try it if you need help. We're all pretty patient with you. So, if you get an invitation to do a meeting by Zoom, go ahead and do it, especially as it's coming up here with the winter, and we want to stay away from indoors. It will be the theme of tonight here once we hear about COVID. Anybody else want to check in? This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. This is the emergency preparedness set. Taking check-ins.
Kilo Golf, Kilo Quebec, Greg from Albany.
Okay, Greg, it got a little bit of a static right in the middle of your call there, and I missed the center part. So could you come in with the call, please?
Kilo Delta 7, Whiskey Indio Quebec.
There we go. Magic, it worked. Kilo Delta 7, Whiskey India Quebec. Greg, thank you for checking in tonight. Anybody else for emergency prayer sent?
November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo, and November 7, Delta Kilo Bravo, Richard and Deborah in Albany.
Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray, Crittenden in Salem.
Okay, there's a couple more. That was Crittenden, Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray. Welcome. We had Richard and Deborah check in there. November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo. That's Richard. And November 7, Delta Kilo Bravo. That's Deborah from Albany with a great signal as always. Okay, 11 minutes after 7, so let's pause here for just a bit. Actually, a pretty good turnout tonight. Thank you for showing up tonight. Anybody have any announcements for the net tonight? For the, good of the amateur radio community.
Are you looking for questions, WA7ABU?
We will look for questions, Dan, but want to just do any announcements that you want to do for the repeater or otherwise first, real quick.
First, have you checked your timeout timer lately? Please check your timeout timer. And don't set it for any more than 10 minutes. Many of the HF radios have timeout timers on them now. You may find you need 10 minutes on HF. You don't need it on VHF. Set it for 3 minutes. But 5 minutes is probably acceptable for ICOMs that don't have 3 minute settings. That's all right. But it really doesn't make any sense that you can block a repeater for 4 hours without your timeout timer kicking in. So please set your timeout timer. It doesn't have to be set for 3 minutes, but who needs to talk longer than 3 minutes besides me and Brett? Back to you, Brett, WA7ABU.
Okay, Dan. Yeah, that actually was going to be my first topic. Now, I did mention this at the CTR Club, but we actually had a little bit of a repeater emergency, and it worked out to be a nice exercise in both technical and community cooperation problem solving. So let's start with that because, so first thing is that when we do emergency communications, the first thing we have to figure out is, what frequencies are you going to use, right? Come up with some kind of a plan, right? So, most people here, we think of the 529 as kind of home. So that was sort of our primary frequency. But as we announce each time, we have a secondary frequency, a secondary repeater that we like to use, the 145.19. And we say if there's, if we need to, we'll go to the 145.19. When we do exercises, say, for the auxiliary communications, we also have a simplex frequency that we keep in mind. And when you do simplex, it's got a little more shorter range and a little more difficult, but we tend to like have a different simplex frequency for different agencies or counties or something like that. But on this repeater, yesterday at 10 o'clock when Dan was getting ready to do the TechNet, it wasn't on there, and I got on the radio, and it's just like what we're talking about, incident command. You get on the radio, it doesn't work the way you think it should work. What do you do? There's no TechNet. There's TechNet every Monday through Friday on 529, not yesterday. So, what's the first step? You go to 519 after we wake up Dan and make sure that he's actually awake or something like that. But, we go to 519, and we see what's happening on 519. Well, no Dan on 519 either. So with that in mind, I was the first one on the scene. I take control as net control operator. Okay, so that's something I want all of you guys to realize, is that if something happens, you need to get on the radio, see what's happening. If no one's talking about it, you take control as net control, okay? If 529 doesn't work, you go to 519, all right? And there's other repeaters around too, but let's just focus on that for right now. That's what happened yesterday. Let me get a drip. Okay, so once we arrived at the 519, and it was obvious that Dan said, I can't do the net. I'm trying to find a jamming signal. That is, that we have someone with a stuck key who is blocking the operation of the repeater, and it's been happening for several hours, and now he's out in his car, so he obviously can't be the net control. That's another emergency preparedness principle that, just because you have somebody who's assigned to the job, they may not be available to you, so you have to have backups. And if there's not a backup, we don't usually have a backup for each day, but, other people should take charge. And that's why we kind of encourage you to try being net control, because it's not that hard, really, honestly. It just is a matter of getting used to hearing the call signs and learning voices. But it's good practice for everyone. Let me get a drip. Okay, so yesterday, 10 o'clock, we get on there, after the fact, we try to start the net. We find out that the 529 is not working, and so this is the next part. If your repeater is not working, you need to find out why. And what we found is that yes, there's a carrier, but no audio. Okay, so you can listen on the regular frequency, and you can see if you do have a signal strength meter. Yeah, that signal strength is high, probably on your location there, but. It doesn't help, it doesn't tell you where it's coming from. We just know that the repeater's, not working right. So what are some next steps that we could do to figure out what's going on here? Do we want to, if the repeater is putting out good signal and there's nobody on there, no audio, what do we do next? Anybody?
KWU.
Yeah, go ahead. KWU.
Well, if it deals with trying to find a signal source, you could hook up a radio and a directional antenna with a lot of gain so that it'll pinpoint down in one direction. And make sure you have an RF gain of some sort of control or modify in a pot and just use it for a receive instead of transmit and for temporary. And then you could pretty much set that up mobile-like, and go find the source.
Okay, Dean, well, that's good, but that's probably step two. So what's step one? What if you're just sitting there with your radio, and you've tuned into the 519, you got a dual bander, regular vertical antenna. What's the first thing you can do to figure out what might be blocking the signal? What can you listen to? What can you do to your radio so that you can start hearing where the signal's coming from?
W7MTL.
Well, hello, Craig. I'll check you in. Go ahead.
Yeah, just checking in. And, if you get on the repeater and transmit and the repeater's not working, check the input frequency and see if there's a signal on there that timed out the repeater.
Okay, so very good. So I'm going to turn this into a little more of a general sort of thing. So how do you do that? So if you've been using a lot of people, especially when you're starting out, you got your, a lot of these radios do what we call automatic repeater shift, right? So what's the command on the radio? What function are we looking for on the radio to listen to the input? What's that called?
U7MTL.
KWAU.
Yeah, let's take Craig there. And how? What's it called? And how would we listen on it? What would be a common button to push or whatever?
Yeah, probably on some radios it's labeled different, but I'm using a Yaesu FT2800 right now, and you push the button that says DW, D is the W stands for watch, and you push that button, it switches it over, so it's opposite. You're listening on the repeater input frequency. But when you transmit, you'll be on the repeater output frequency. So that's the button it is on this radio. Just push the button labeled DW or reverse.
Okay, very good. And Dean, did you have anything to add to that? I guess what if you can't find the button? Like on some Bofangs and things, it's a little bit tricky. I know you think you should push like the star or something, but if you don't know how to do that, what could you do?
KWU. Yeah, just input the 0.6 meg down from the repeater output for the repeater input. Type in the frequency and listen to the input frequency to the repeater, which would be your simplex. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm backwards on that. Okay. Yeah, I'm backwards.
Okay, so let's, all right, good. So for the 14529, if you take away 0.6, then you get 144.69. Now, is that the same everywhere on the 2-meter band, or, so we could listen on 14469. So that's the first step, okay? We want to listen on the input. If you have a radio that's got a REV or DW button on it, then you push that, and it actually switches that way, and then you can listen. Or you could actually program a frequency into your radio, which is the reverse. I do that on mine because I do a lot of net control stuff. So I actually have right next to each other the 519 and the 529, and so I can listen on both sides of the radio. I can quick just go down one channel and pick up the reverse. It's another way you can do it. What if you're, like, talking on the 14706? Is it going to be the same way?
0.6.
Okay, Dean, I heard positive. Yeah, there's this tradeover going positive. Someone else was in there doubling with you. Let's see who that was. Okay, yeah, Richard, go ahead, and I'll repeat your question in case you're taping this or recording it. Not taping anymore. Sorry, showing my age. Yeah, very good. Now, here's another trickier one that most people don't get is if you're listening on the 440 type repeaters, what's the offset? This sort of usually blows people's mind, but what's the offset on the 440 say if you were listening on your favorite 440 repeater?
That would be 5 megahertz up or down, depending on where you're at. KWAU? Oh, also I wanted to add in, while you're listening into the input frequency, if you're trying to find somebody, you can actually, without a beam, with an Omni, just triangulate, drive, different sections, and watch the signal increase and keep turning down your gain, and kind of get a good idea. You can pinpoint somebody right to within several hundred feet, basically, and look for antennas at that point. KWAU.
Okay, yep, we could have used you yesterday. Obviously, you've done this a little bit, but again, when the crisis first starts, and we don't know where the signal's coming from. In fact, Dan, hears a very strong signal right away on the 14469 coming from the east. Just very strong, and in fact, on my radio up in South Salem, I was hearing with the Moxon pointed east, I was getting a nearly full signal, full-scale signal on this. So he starts heading east, but what we use, the first thing is, again, we have a whole amateur radio community, and the good thing is that we go on to the alternate frequency, we start out, we tell people what's happening, and we get cooperation from people, and we say, first of all, can anyone hear this on the input, okay? With your regular radio. And what we found out right away was there are people like a guy in Corvallis, Steve down there said, I can't hear it on the input at all from here. And someone up in Portland said, oh, I hear it pretty strong up here. So the first thing was, well, it's not down in Corvallis, anyway, by getting some signal, just basic signal reports from people, whether they could hear it or not on the input, that was the first thing in terms of tracking it down. And that's a very helpful thing. Being able to hear someone on the input, lets you know that you're close enough that you can do simplex with them if you need to. So let's talk about simplex a little bit real quick. Can you still use a repeater to maybe make an announcement? Frank brought this up, KG7DZ. People are listening on the 529, they're not hearing anything. Is there any way that you could make an announcement and they could, talk over that thing that's blocking the signal? Any ideas?
KWAU. Yes, you can increase your power hopefully enough to override their signal, and people would be able to actually pick you out on the output of the repeater over top of that output non-modulated signal they're putting in there. It should come out a little bit, sometimes more, sometimes less. So, you know, it's just hit or miss, depending on your distance, your antenna gains, all kinds of different things. But that's one way you could do it, is crank your power up and try to see if you can get through it.
W7MTL.
Yeah, Craig, go ahead.
Yeah, the other day when we had the carrier, the repeater had timed out, and I thought there might be people up here in the local area not knowing what was going on, that we moved to 145.19 for the net. So I flipped it in reverse. So I was picking up the carrier on the input frequency. Then with it on reverse, you're transmitting on the repeater output frequency, and I put it out an announcement that the technical discussion net was going on 145.19, so anybody in simplex range of me would pick it up and hear me. And know what was going on.
Okay, very good. That's what I wanted to say is, okay, so the problem, Dean, was that this thing had been going on for 4 hours. It had timed out the repeater, and every time the repeater timeout would go, it was still keyed down. It would key up again. Now, if you caught it at the right point, you might be able to talk over it with power, but it was a very strong signal. It was a full-scale signal. It was full scale on the input, so the repeater timed out. So that was the problem. But Craig, you're absolutely right. The other function is that when you flip it to reverse, when you key down, you're talking on the output. So this is something that we come up with sometimes when people get a new radio and they've never used it before. They don't really realize the repeater shift, and they start talking on 145.29. And if you're near them, you can hear them, right? But you can still use a repeater frequency on simplex, even if it's timed out, by talking on the output of the repeater. And so you can make an announcement and say you've moved to another frequency. But so there, that's that always worked very well. We had very good cooperation from people, and then we were able to coordinate the actual bunny hunters to go out with their mobile units and try to triangulate the signal. And we can talk about that more on if you have any questions about how it actually works, so we can talk about that more on the TechNet. But Dan's announcement today was that there is a feature on the radio that everybody should know about and should set. If you're going to use repeaters, please find the timeout timer. It's on Yaesu, it's called TOT. It is a turned off usually by default, but you want to go in there and turn it on so it's 3 or 5 minutes. Timeout when you use repeaters because it will stop the radio from transmitting after that time period. You'll still be able to hear on it, so it's different than the automatic power off. So the timeout timer is that feature. You want to make sure that is definitely on all your radios. Are there any questions or further discussion on this?
So in the time that you guys KF7BUV, in the time you guys just been talking about it, I checked both my radios and set them both for 3 minutes.
Okay, yeah, good job. Well, yeah, see, the thing is that they're not set. Usually most radios don't come with that as a factory setting. So it is a very helpful thing. And I think all of us have had this situation where you set the mic down, and I don't know if you use a car mobile unit. You set your mic in the cup holder, and it pushes the push to talk, and then you're embarrassed. Most of the time it's not malicious, but there are other things that can happen. Is that if you're using digital equipment or TNCs or something like that, I've had, you know, when the program crashes or you get RF into the computer, oftentimes it'll get stuck on transmit. So, again, the radio is the only way it's going to turn itself off. So you've got to make sure that that timeout timer is on there. If you're one that likes to leave the radio on all the time, you know, the automatic power off feature is optional. But I would say that in a car radio or on a mobile radio, you might want to have an automatic power off set too, so it goes off after a couple hours, so you don't run your battery down in case you leave your radio on. And especially if it's in the stuck on transmit, believe me, it's going to use your batteries up real quick if you don't have that timeout timer. So automatic power off and timeout timer features you should set. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, and this is the Emergency Preparedness Net.
KWAU.
Yes, sir, Dean. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to add one more thing to that timeout. Definitely that is a number one important thing to do. But number two, what a person can do, and in a lot of cases should do if you have the capability in your rig to do it, is to make your microphone mount up to where you visually, it reminds you when you hang up your mic, instead of just throwing it down in a cup holder, have an actual clip that it's kind of in your peripheral view to where when you're driving along, that microphone, you know, you're listening to radio, and so your microphone's kind of reminding you that, you know, it's still there, you know, so it's kind of in your sight where you actually hang up your mic, and that will tend to help a person, you know, not accidentally put it down someplace else. So where you mount your mic is kind of a secondary critical thing that you can do to help keep you from making this happen accidentally. You know, just if you can. A lot of interiors might not allow that without any drilling, but, you know, then you can use a Velcro type of situation or something. So might be just another topic to talk about. I don't know. KWAU.
Yeah. Thank you, Dean, for that comment. Yeah, you could put a clip on on the vent and hang the mic up. Actually, it's a binder clip, so we'll do that. You can actually hang a mic off a binder clip, I found out. And, yeah, good point. Richard, go ahead. Okay, I'll just repeat that because you might be, he's just mentioned again that the desk mics, and I don't know in this case whether it was desk mic or not, that often have a locking button on it or a toggle type button, and it just keeps it on transmit. And that's something to really watch out for. And I don't know if this, you could set down a clipboard or something on top of your desk mic by mistake and trigger it, and that. No, that could be a problem. But again, the timeout timer would be the solution to that problem because after a few minutes, the radio will stop doing that. So that's a good thing. Okay. So anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention is that, again, we had very good cooperation using the operating on the alternate frequency. You know, we coordinated. We ran the bunny hunt. We gave people signal reports so that they knew, Dan knew that right away it wasn't actually coming from the east. And one person said, well, I hear it in, I think it might be in Canby. And then we, you know, there's other techniques too. You can talk about them on the TechNet. But I just want to congratulate people for, you know, using the repeaters as designed. You know, we have a primary repeater and a backup repeater. And, you know, by, you know, using people's reports, you know, knowing who the people are, knowing where they are, asking them, well, where do you live? You know, we were able to pin it down very quickly. And once we all worked together, we had it tracked down in about 50 minutes. Dan managed to get up there, and he used his Doppler, and he found the situation. And a phone call was made, and we don't know. But it was overheard on the input. Someone asked his wife, please turn off my transmitter, and then the signal went away. So wasn't anyone that was, hurt or anything, which was good, but it was a bit of an emergency. The repeater wasn't working, and remember that we depend on the repeaters, and they can be locked out by a stuck mic or a jammer, for that matter. So we've given you a couple of techniques. Using Simplex, listening on the input to try to eliminate the source, tracking it down, working together. That's the key there. Are there any other comments on that?
KWAU. Hey, Brett.
Okay, I got Dean in there. Was there somebody else? Okay, Dean, you got the floor. Go ahead.
Yeah, how about the 6-meter repeater? It's hard to reach and all, but maybe something to do with that. Maybe with, not a secondary, but like a third area or whatever.
Yeah, now that's the thing that's interesting. We've done a little bit of testing with the last couple of sets, and people, we find out, are just not equipped to do 6 or 10 meters, even though they're, common bands. It turns out most of the people who are out, amateurs, have got their HF radios, and they may or may not use them. But we're doing repeater work. They've got your 2 meters at 440. We could have used we wouldn't go to 6. We probably would go to 440. Now our 440 repeater at the 529 is actually 440/4950, and it happens to be a digital repeater, fusion repeater now. But it's helpful to have. I think 2 meter and 440 are what most people use. And again, if you can hear somebody on Simplex, you can certainly do that. You can talk on the reverse and be heard to get off to another frequency. And of course, we can always use the calling frequency too to coordinate there. But most people don't seem to have 6 meters ready to go. We had trouble finding people to do that.
Yeah, KWU. When you're dealing with them 440, that is super, super great for HTs, just because of the efficiency of the antenna system upon a HT, versus that band. From what experiments I've always done, you can get through a lot better with a 440 signal than you can ever with a 2 meter off an HT, that is, versus, say, mobiles or bases. But just speaking of HTs in general, that 440 band is a great thing for HTs. KWU.
Okay, yeah, good point. So that's, I think, the thing is that whenever you come up, try to come up with your own plan. Now, again, this wasn't a real, emergency, but we're talking about emergency preparedness, that you're going to need to, depends on what groups that you work with. They may have a plan published, but in general, the ones that are in your area geographically that you use a lot, that people, I think it's a, I like to think of us as a community, and even though I haven't met a lot of you face-to-face, I really feel like I know your voices, I know your call signs, and, if one of you guys calls me up and says something, I'm more likely to believe, people I know, and it's a great thing to have good situational reports and get cooperation. I mean, that's the power of the radio system. It does work very, very well. We just need to make sure our frequencies are available to us. So having more than one repeater, You know, if you have other capabilities, it depends on the emergency and who you're involved with. But if you're an HF user, you know, you can go to one of the statewide nets if you need to call out for help. The Beaver State Net or the Oregon Emergency Net or the Noontime Net people. That covers a big area. Local repeaters. You might. We also have the 14706 that is used a lot by people that listen to this repeater as well. There are other frequencies. A lot of the churches have multiple frequencies available, 440 and otherwise, and you should have a list of that somewhere in your go kit of frequencies that you have tested that you know people that use, and that's just a good idea. Are there any other comments on that or anything else you want to say about channel plans and emergencies on the radio?
KWU, one more thing. A lot of times they're always advertising wherever you look on the internet when you were dealing with two-way radios about 333. I believe it's 333. Might mention something about that. KWU.
Okay, so I'm not a big radio ad person, but why don't you tell us what 333 is, Dean?
Hey, you put me on the stand here. yeah, a lot of it's, I wish I could tell you right off the bat. I would have to look back into it because it's been a while since I did that, and I'm super tired right now. So a lot of things I'm saying right now, sometimes I got to refresh my own brain. That's why I was hoping you kind of knew about it. I could go look it up and stuff, but right in front of me where I'm at right now, I can't really get to the computer to look it up. But it's kind of like a, if everything hits the fan type thing. They've got a chart, and it deals with a whole bunch of different bands, frequencies, and radios. If you've got FRS or MERS or, GMRS or sidebands in different frequencies, 440, and, just all these different things, and it's for emergency preparedness that you would look at that, and it's like, I think it's every third hour, 3 minutes on the first part of the hour, things, I can't remember everything about it right off the bat without looking it up, but it's pretty interesting, and it's been advertised for quite some time, and it's worth checking into. KWU.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net. I've got a little bit sidetracked on radios today, but, again, having plans is great, but you have to share the plans with other people. And, if you want to help out another group or you want to be involved, say, for example, I don't get the emails from the CERT people, and they have nets, I think first Sunday of the month and things like that. I always forget that, and I don't remember offhand what the frequency they use is, but if you're not practicing with them, you're not going to know it. So that's the thing, is that you need to practice the frequencies, and the easiest frequencies to practice are the ones that you are the nets, and the nets are very effective. And we have, our nets, and there's you should try to find, a net that's not necessarily your, that you might check into. Like, I lately have been checking into a Monday night net in Portland and the 704 because I can get to them, and that's a big repeater area. And so now I've got an alternate place to talk to, but, and I'm learning people up there. So I think there's some value to knowing people, to meeting them, to taking part in some of their nets. We also have this, if you're District 4 net that's on 14.5.33. It's if you're a member of one of the emergency groups or CERT or something, That's or one of the clubs. That's on Mondays and Thursdays at 7. So try some other nets once in a while, other frequencies, and get used to try to meet some people there. Introduce yourself, and we just build the community that way. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf, Delta Bravo, and this is the Emergency Preparedness Net. And we need to talk about COVID, but let's break here for just a second and see if anybody else wants to check in. Okay, I'm not hearing anyone. All right, so here's the deal. Nationwide, we are experiencing a second wave of COVID infections, and but I'm going to try to focus on us in Oregon. What we're seeing again is what was predicted. Remember, we talked about what you know. Basically, here's the deal, and this is just my. I'll sort of start with my conclusion, and you guys can. And then we can look at some of the numbers and get your input. You know, apparently, you know, we have done what we can do at this point in time. You know, people, you know, were really good at the very beginning. We all, you know, heard about this thing coming, and everybody, you know, reacted immediately and isolated themselves and stayed indoors and didn't go out and do anything. And, you know, our initial surge in was very regional. It happened in places like New York and in Washington, Seattle area, and in California and various places. They were big centers of activity. And obviously, you know, there was quite a few deaths and things that surprised us. We didn't know what to do about it. We all kind of hunkered down and closed everything, and that brought the first wave down, okay? And then it, you know, we gradually started, we had these restrictions that we tried to sort of relax them as things got better, and as that happened, and, you know, as we start changing our behavior, the numbers go up again. And, you know, you can pinpoint different things, but if you look at our local statistics, you know, you'll see that a lot of places around the country, most of the places, in fact, are on the upswing again, all right? So think about that for just a minute. What have we done, you know, that's different? What's different now than it was in March? So let's, when we first learned about this stuff, have we done anything differently other than behavior with regard to COVID?
KWAU.
Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
And you notice I'd sit there and I wait for a while in case somebody's going to key up before I say anything, because I've been talking too darn much on here. But, yeah, people tend to get a little bit too relaxed and comfortable when things start going good. And we do that with all kinds of different parts of our lives. It's our human nature to do stuff like that. I know it's some more than others. Just thought I'd throw that at you. KWU.
So anyway, you're right. And yeah, so what we're going to talk about a little bit is that there's pandemic fatigue has set in. It's set in for me. It's set in for most people that are probably listening. We're tired of this. This is no fun, okay? And every time we think it's fun and that we're sort of getting things under control, we start looking at you know, numbers, and they start going up, and that's discouraging, right? So, and we start thinking, gosh, you know, well, it isn't going to matter anymore, you know. So let's just kind of try to take it in you know, sort of a very objective, okay? I want you to be very objective about this stuff. And first of all, okay, What are the biggest risks? Now, I think we already have, you know, obviously people have died. Lots of people have died. Now, Oregon just reached their 701 people died in Oregon. Now, that's a lot, but we're not a huge state, and it's overall is a fraction of the total, you know, in the country. which, I think is around 230-something thousand people. Everywhere has, deaths. Now, and the deaths, obviously, all accumulate. It's not a number that goes, that goes down. But you can average it, and you can see that, the way that this thing works, you get cases, and then you get hospitalizations, and then you get deaths. And the first thing is that, the number of deaths didn't go up. It's not going up at the same rate as the number of cases. That's a good thing, okay? And there are some reasons for that. But, we actually are a little better at keeping people alive. All right? So not as many people are dying from it. And if you look at the demographics, what you're finding is that a lot of the cases are happening in middle-aged or younger people. Not as many as more in the older age group that was immediately affected. The risk is still the same, in the different groups. That hasn't changed. What has changed is that now COVID is pretty much everywhere. If you look at before it was regional, it was there were little hot spots and things, and we were tracking things, outbreaks in places. We were doing that. But now, when you look at the numbers, what you're seeing is a lot of people can't trace where they got their infection. They're showing up infected. They say, I'm doing what I need to do. I'm wearing my mask. I don't know where I got this thing from. Okay, and that's pretty much because that's a timeout timer. KG7CDB. That's pretty much because the we have. It's everywhere. Okay, so when the disease is in the community and we can't trace it anymore, then we can't say, hey, you stay home. You've got this illness. All right, and so we can't isolate the cases. So it's out there. Okay, it's out there at some percentage. We don't know what it is. It hasn't been real high in Oregon. We don't have it. We have a much more lot of geography and a lot of room, but it's spread out. Different counties have higher rates, things like that. So you look at these numbers, and invite you to do that. Some of them are very objective. Like the number of hospital beds are very objective. That's the thing we're going to need to worry about here now. Let me just focus on that a bit. Okay. So when it comes to dealing with this illness, like we said, the bug is still out there. The COVID is still out there. It hasn't gone away. All right, people are still out there. They're still doing their thing. A lot of people, I think at this point in time, if things are opened up, the people are wearing masks. People in Oregon, I think they're projecting that about 70% of the people are wearing masks in Oregon. We're actually pretty good at that, wearing the mask, according to University of Washington Institute of Health, the healthdata.org network. We're actually, they're showing us that, our mask use right now, they project, is around 72%. So that's pretty good. Going to everybody, some kind of mask mandate, make everybody wear the masks, it's not going to change our numbers all that much, okay, because people are being pretty good about it, all right? So we do kind of then what we can do with masks, all right? So what's the other step that we can do? And what do we have to worry about at this point in time? Okay, that's kind of what I'm trying to get you to think about. It's not masks. It has to do with the change in the seasons, and what do we need to do to get the numbers to go down again? They're going up, and they're going up for a reason.
KWDU.
Okay, yeah, Dean, go ahead.
It's the indoor socialing that's getting people closer to one another. Temperatures are going down outside. Everybody's got not that fresh air blowing by them, but stagnant air in the places where they're at, and they need to start, paying attention to, the distancing problem, basically. And also, what I've noticed is the types of masks people are wearing. Some are just wearing this, translucent thing in front of them, and they're breathing in all the air right behind it, so there's no filtration whatsoever. Regular masks are bad for filtration, to start with. Granted, COVID's in the droplets, but the COVID vibrates itself can be down into, you know, what you can get down into measuring with microns, and it just passes right through things. But if you figure in the COVID's in a liquid droplet as a cough or something, you know, that gives you more of a chance of not getting it through the filter, because the droplet itself is larger than the filter porous. But anyway, a matter of too many people in one area, basically too close, because of the colder temperatures outside. So that puts people in those types of environments versus, you know, what people would be in summer type environments, more space and such. KW8U.
Okay, so yeah, that's a good point. So, you know, again, these are kind of just you're thinking like an epidemiologist here. There's you know, people are studying this, they're trying to get real data for us, you know, try to figure out what's happening. But I think most of you have realized there is some common sense involved here. First of all, I think all of you know that things really haven't changed. We don't, you know, we haven't done anything to make the virus go away. We haven't developed the vaccine yet that everybody's going to take, and hopefully we'll make a difference. You know, we haven't even really opened schools fully yet. We're still kind of, you know, we've done some behaviors, but people are still, you know, going indoors more. And as the weather cools, as Dean mentioned, if you look at the nation right now, there's these great maps, you know, that show the color coding. A lot of it is the northern states now are starting to really pick up, and the northern Midwest, the colder areas, you know, are starting to show some real increases in the numbers, like North Dakota, South Dakota. You know, they're starting to show increases, and so, you know, we know what's going on here. You know, we really can't go indoors. The biggest piece of news that was different that came out, finally they've admitted it, you know, it is an aerosol disease. That means it's airborne. It stays in the air. So if a bunch of people have been in a room, you know, it's going to stay in the room for a while. How long? Well, I guess it depends on the particle size. It depends on the ventilation. It depends on whether there's airflow. It was fine when people were outdoors. We were doing good outdoors. You know, we kept it at bay. And now it's something's happened, and we're moving indoors, and the numbers are going up. And with the number of people going up and losing track of where these cases are coming from, we're exposed more. So the number of people that actually have this is much higher than it was out in our county, especially like Marion County, than it was back in March. You know, much riskier going into a place. So just keep that in mind. That's really the thing to keep in mind, is that we have that. And so what do we need to watch? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Comment, Cape Gov.
Yeah, is that Tim there? Go ahead.
Yeah, Brett, it is. You know, the question I have in my mind is, are we really seeing an upswing in cases, or are we merely getting more people tested that, in fact, were positive for COVID, to see a kind of an artificial high?
Yeah, so good question. So in Oregon, we never really had that many tests, okay? It's interesting if you look at the different sources of information. You know, they talk about having, you know, having more tests than you do positives, and we tend to not have that many tests in Oregon. I'm trying to find the current numbers here, infections and testing for us. All right. Yeah, so right now, let's see. Yeah, you know, they're estimating that our current, right, this is the University of Washington with their models. They think that we have, by today, around 650 cases or so of estimated infections, you know. But in terms of testing, our tests are really actually around 54 per day is what it says here on this daily count of tests, so that are coming up positive. So we're not finding all these people, you know. So they, you know, we're not testing to the degree that you can blame it all on the test, right? So, but okay. So let's again. We said that the deaths are not going up very much. But what is the real risk to our system? What's gonna break it? And that has to do with hospitals. Okay. So what we need to do is we need to look at our hospital numbers, and that's when we start to get worried. Okay, because if the hospitals can have the capacity to treat people, we're actually getting pretty good now at treating people. And younger people that get infected don't go to the hospital as much. If they do, I mean, then we treat them, and we have some new drugs that are, you know, the dexamethasone and the remdesivir antivirals, and some people have you know, some new you know, antibody cocktails and things on the horizon that might be available, but convalescent plasma, things like that they can try, you know, but they got to be in the hospital to get. They have to be in a hospital that can take care of these people. That, and so what we worry about is when the hospital reaches capacity. That's the problem. So you need to look at our hospital numbers and look at our, you know, compared to our number of ICU beds and the all beds, and make sure that we keep our numbers below that, because if we exceed that, then we can't take care of people as well, and then the deaths will go up.
KWAU.
Yeah, Dean, go ahead.
Yeah, a while back, oh, I don't know what time it was a couple months or so ago, they did set up extra beds down at the fairgrounds. And then as soon as, like, that kind of petered out after a bit, and because they weren't using them, and then all of a sudden the forest fires, they used that area for, you know, temporary sheltering for the forest fires. And so is that another possibility that they could reset that up again real quick? I would assume it would be a fairly easy thing to do if they've already done it once, you know, in case of an emergency where there was overloaded at the hospital. So just thinking about that. KWAU.
Yeah, KG7GDB. So, good point. What they're doing in areas, again, there are places where, you know, that they don't have good hospital capacity, or there are smaller towns that don't have. What they're doing right now is transporting people to other locations that have capacity. That's the current setup. Like, you know, for instance, you know, if you're in Idaho right now, Idaho's got a surge of cases. They send people to Boise. You know, they're not going to be able to do it in, you know, Sandpoint or something like that. You know, they might move them to Portland, you know, or Spokane or something. So anyway, you want to get to a place where they can take care of you. That's the first step. Okay. So again, we don't want to get to a point where hospital capacity, a normal hospital capacity and ICU beds, are in short supply, because then we're not going to be able to take care of people as well. And hospitals, you know, again, they opened up again and doing more procedures and things like that. There are people in the hospital. It's not like they're just sitting around waiting for people to show up. So I think that we will probably, as a country, won't get too excited about wanting to change our behavior until hospitals start to get full. That's kind of what happened down in the Texas and Arizona when they had the surge there. All of a sudden the hospitals are full, and then people took it seriously. So I think, you know, people, you know, don't, they realize that, yeah, I can't go to the hospital, sort of in trouble, right? We expect to be taken care of, and we need to keep those resources going. So the only thing we can do at this point is behavior. So that means stay out of those closed environments, even if they allow you to do it. It's going to be up to you to look at your own community and avoid those situations if you can. Don't go visit your family for Christmas if it's an area that you know, you haven't been before. That's just spreading it around and meeting new people. That's something you just won't probably consider this year. Let's do it later. Do it in the summertime. Meet outdoors. But a winter visit right now indoors, that would not be a good idea. Any comments on this, KG7GB? Okay, well, I hate to end on such a bummer tonight. We're sort of out of time. But, yeah, just keep an eye on our numbers. Keep an eye on our hospital numbers. Again, the deaths are doing pretty good. We're doing all right on that. But overall, lots of cases around the area and a lot that are not – the numbers are growing that are not – that do not have a known source. That is the thing that's different. And the number of percentage positive cases are going up still. We're not too bad still in Oregon, and I think we've kind of done what we can do without going back to some other restriction. So, I don't like the restrictions any more than anyone else does, but I have been not going into restaurants. I really won't go into a restaurant right now because I think that that's something I can do. I don't need to be told not to do that. I can figure that out myself. I don't want to go into a restaurant right now. I will still get food to go. If it's warm enough, I'll eat outside, but I have not been in a restaurant, and I suggest that you don't either. Anyway, that's kind of the last thing I wanted to say about the COVID. We'll revisit it again, I hope, with positive news as things come up, but take your flu shot. That's a good idea. Get that. I don't want to get flu on top of it, and be safe, okay? Any final comments before I close on that?
ABU?
Yeah, Dan, go ahead.
I was very happy at the way that my flu shot was administered, in spite of the fact it seemed like it was kind of a assembly line. It was a good assembly line. It was outdoor in a tent. And I was the only one in my area. And it moved along extremely fast. And so fast I didn't get a chance to read my that paper I signed that said, yes, it's okay to give it to me. But I've had so many flu shots that I'm not really worried about that. So I was very happy about it. I brought one question to this net, and I haven't had a chance to get it in. This is kind of a subjective question, but in going out to many, many places, you have to get gas. You have to go to certain places to get certain things done. And it's been my experience that better than half the people that I see serving the public don't really believe that there is even the slightest chance that they'll have a COVID problem. I think that they feel that meeting somebody with COVID is like 1 in a million chance. I think that the numbers are closer to 1 in 350, with the highest possibility being something like 1 in 1,000 of meeting a person who has COVID in person. It might be more like 1 in 3,000 because people with COVID are staying home. What do you think the likely possible number is, just based on your own experience and what you've read, WA7ABU?
Yeah, I guess that number has kind of gone up. We had some discussion about this earlier about trying to, because we're not testing the way we would like to test. If we could test everyone, then we could answer that question, okay? But by sampling the way we do and saying, well, I want to test people who have symptoms or who have been around known cases or that kind of thing, it's really hard to get a good idea. Now, you can take the numbers that are, hospitalized, and you can say, well, there's only a certain percentage of people who end up in the hospital, and you can kind of project out from there. Just trying to find the current numbers here. But I think it's probably more like 1 in 10 people that you might encounter. What they're saying right now in terms of percentage, percent in for Oregon, is around 8% of those tested. I was just trying to look at the county indicators here. Percentage of tests that are positive, like, for example, Oregon statewide, is on an uptrend, and it's at 6.6% of those tested are positive, okay? Again, we can't test everybody, but our county, it's in every county, you know. It used to be, it wasn't, you know, but now it is. And so, you know, we can look at, I guess, just assume that it's out there. You know, we've had total number, they say, 43,000 cases, you know, in Oregon. But, you know, the thing is, avoid the places where it hasn't gone up until this change in behavior, right? And so by going indoors, if you with people who might potentially have a problem, you know, you're putting yourself at risk. If you're outdoors and you know, staying away from them, well, you haven't got sick yet. That tends to work, okay? So just realize that as more people get sick and the more they spend time indoors, the greater your risk is, and it is there. And I don't know that the number matters at this point. What the total number is? It's a risk. KG7GDB.
KW8U.
KNRCP. Yep. Okay. So let's see. I guess we're going a little bit over tonight. Dean first, and then. Richard.
I was just going to share a personal thing, and it's just, it was about, for instance, myself, I always wear a mask whenever I go in someplace, and just a few days ago, I actually was at a family event, and I walked in wearing a mask, and there was not one person in there, family members wise, and all of them I trust, you know, to be responsible and such, were wearing a mask. And they looked at me like I was an idiot, you know, and it's just like, what are you doing with this mask on, you know? And so I made the decision to pull it down. I still kept it on, but just pulled it down, but not, you know, to where it's safe. And I went along with it, and I'm watching everybody, you know, and I'm looking for signs, you know, coughing, anybody acting weird like they're, you know, something wrong with them, they're sick or anything like that, and didn't find nothing. But it always puts it's kind of a peer pressure thing that I let myself get into. I'm sharing my own personal thing here, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that do the same darn thing. They get in a situation like that, and they just kind of go with the flow, which I did in this particular case, and I usually never let myself do that. I'm strong enough mentally not to do that, but this particular case, I let my guard down, and so I'm watching for the next week to make sure that I didn't catch anything there, but that's something I'm sure that happens a lot with a lot of different people and a lot of different families. They get in these situations to where they let their other family members kind of influence them because of kind of a peer pressure type of thing. And that might be a totally different topic right there, you know, but I think that's how some of this stuff gets spread when we just can't answer, and that a lot of people will go to one or two or three or, you know, more of them, you know, in a short period of time, too. So just thought I'd throw that at you. So my stupidity makes me think, why did I do that? KW8U.
Yep, good point. And I know that that's part of the pandemic fatigue problem is that, you know, when you see other people not doing it, you think, oh, well, geez, you know, it is a peer pressure thing. And I would say just try not to do that. I mean, the thing is, it's not your family member's fault. You know, the virus doesn't care who you are or who you love. You know, it might be somebody that has no symptoms. Remember that. I will tell you one thing before I let Richard on here real quick. The very first person that I knew was a friend of the one of my daughter's good friends who lives in Denver. He's a National Guardsman. He got contracted COVID. He was used back in about April, and he had more flu-like symptoms. He was a runner, and he couldn't run, and he got a fever and went in, got tested positive, and then he took a couple days off work, and they they let him back to work when he, you know, his symptoms disappeared, and he went back to being a National Guardsman and helping out in shelters and what have you. Well, just found out today from my daughter, he got COVID again. He tested positive again. Now, this time, he doesn't have the symptoms, but they're isolated him for 10 days. So, you know, this is the end of one. I'm a scientist, or was a scientist. That's the way I think it. You know, it's anecdotal. But here's a guy who, you know, has access to good testing equipment. And, yeah, he's had it twice now. That's 6 months apart. So, you know, he's not as sick this time. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's part of it. But he got it again. And that's what we're going to need to find out is I think that this is not going to be lifelong immunity from this thing. So, Canaan RCP, I guess I will let you have the last word, but we need to close our net down. So go ahead.
This is going to be fast. I'm just here to say hi. That's it. Canaan RCP.
Can I give you one more thing before we close?
Okay, yeah, sure, Dean. Of course, you can continue to talk afterwards. I just want to be fair to the listening public that with an hour-long net. And, okay, go ahead. Last word.
Yeah, you're kind of a physician. I would suspect on this COVID stuff, you know, once you get it, let's say you get it kind of, I don't know, whatever your symptoms are. It could be bad, it could be not so bad, whatever, but the secondary, thirdary times, obviously we're going to come in contact with it time and time and time again. The people that make it through the first time, okay. The second time and the third time, things like that. Does your body build up immune system, build up, you know, resistance to this to where you don't have the effects as you did the first time, so it gets better, let's say, with the majority of the people? Now, some people, I'm sure it doesn't, but with the general public, just if you had it twice or three times or four times, does your body build up like an immune system to it? Do you know anything about that? KW8U.
Okay, so this is the, you know, kind of the million-dollar question right now, Dean. This is what we were waiting to find out, okay? We're just starting to see, and I, you know, this was a surprise to me to hear this guy got it again, okay? We're just starting to have people admit that, yes, they've gotten some reports of people being reinfected after having had it. That's new information. Nobody really wants to – that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you don't really want to start – you know, announcing to everyone until you're really sure of how often that is. What we've been told before is it's kind of rare that people would get reinfected. So we really don't know. You know, there's residual effects of getting the illness. Some people end up with, you know, chronic problems, you know, afterwards. Some people don't show any symptoms at all, okay? It's such a weird thing. We don't know yet. We know that people have, you know, we're starting to do things like antibody studies and show that, yeah, people who, you know, in general, there are people who have antibodies and they hadn't to it and they don't have any symptoms. You know, we don't know if they're immune or whether they just fought it off or what, you know, at this point. So that's why we have to do these clinical trials of our vaccines and find out. It's probably going to be that we're going to need a vaccine and a booster shot at the very minimum. And it won't be 100% effective in everybody. So, you know, it's going to be still a combination of behavior and, you know, getting the vaccine. And we're going to have to find out how long does the immunity last. For our flu shots, we're happy to get one once a year. That would be great if it was a once-a-year thing. It'd be even better if it was, you know, you could get a series and be done with it. But, you know, we really don't know. And that's the science that hasn't come out yet. Okay, so let me just close the net here because, yeah, we're way over time. Okay, time is now 8:20 according to the atomic clock here, and this concludes the 5 to 9 emergency preparedness event. There'll be a recording available, I think. Richard OW0EDF tries to record this for us, And we'll try to make that available to you on the groups.io page, WA7ABU at the groups.io page. NET meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. On 145.29 megahertz. Our thanks go out to Dan, WA7 for the ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to all who participated, 21 people tonight. Thanks to those who stood by to give us a clear frequency. I apologize for going over, but we started late on the COVID topic, and there's a lot to talk about that. We'll handle it again next time. But anyway, thank you very much, everyone who participated. Great group, great discussion. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, now closing the net at 8:20. We now return the repeater to normal, undirected amateur operations, and, of course, you may chat away. KG7GDB.